Hello, I'm Kenley Christofferson, and welcome to Band Together, a six-part series exploring how different music teachers foster positive bandroom cultures in their bandroom. In this series, I interview six band teachers and discuss their general views on a positive culture and what strategies they use to implement it. In this third episode, I'm talking to Rob Kroll, who teaches at a small rural Manitoba high school, the one that I attended as a teenager, in fact. This is an amazing conversation. I left the recording session feeling deeply nourished, not just as an educator, but as a human being. He's done a lot of thinking about leadership in a music program and specifically about servant leadership and how to live those values in a classroom. And speaking of values, Rob and his students have spent a lot of time considering the values of their program and, like servant leadership, how to live them. Like both earlier conversations with Michael and Alexis, culture is a living, breathing thing in a classroom and it changes day to day. But that culture isn't delivered in curriculum, though it certainly can be sometimes. It's modeled daily in the actions of the teachers and the students. Rob has some clear, thoughtful ideas about that. Here's our conversation. Rob Kroll is a senior instrumental music teacher at Gimli High School in Gimli, Manitoba. Rob, thanks so much for speaking with me today.
It is absolutely my honor. I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, thanks. So let's jump right in. When we talk about bandroom culture, what does that make you think of in a bandroom?
For me, and for how I've come into the work that I do, the culture of a bandroom is really what you believe, what we in the space believe and what we value in the space. It's even as much as what it is that you feel in the room. And knowing what the purpose is of the thoughts and the actions that happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So when we talk about what we believe, I think we're both talking about the students. Mm-hmm. So or what the students would experience. So what would students experience in an ideal day in the bandroom culture you're describing?
Yeah, you're right. Like the we part of it is it's co-created. It's collaborative. I would never want them to come into the space and feel like music education was happening to them.
Absolutely.
But they're a part of it. So what do they experience in a day with that ideal culture? Hope, capacity, self-love, challenge. I kind of made a little list as I, you know, thinking about that. I want them to have that sense of belonging and that community element. We talk a lot about pursuit of mastery and how that's different from obsession of perfection, the myth of perfection. I hope that they experience failure and I hope that they experience authenticity and music in any form. Some days we make it. Sometimes we just experience it. Sometimes we just talk about it. Reflection, connection. Those are things to me that in the culture we're trying to create together really will support them.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting that you didn't bring up any of the buzzwords that we're talking about right now with assessment. And like, we were just talking about the daily experience, like the daily experience of being in the space.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important because it's so easy to get caught up in the day-to-day band tests, you know, doing attendance. And like that's obviously that's part of the job, but it's not the part that we pursue. I mean, I sometimes pursue better assessment, so I know where my kids are. But I mean, like you're saying, you want them to experience some degree of failure and some degree of capacity, that there's kind of a balance between those two things.
Yeah. You know, I kind of separate in my own mind the tools that we use for education from the experience of every day, in so much that I can be clear and that the tools are meant to support the everyday. So like, just like you said, I think all the time about, well, how can my assessments be more authentic? But I also make a point of impressing with my community that this is a snapshot in time. Like just like a performance is, this performance doesn't define you as a person or a musician. Mm-hmm. This assessment doesn't either. It helps us know what next steps are. So yeah, I don't really think about those when I think about the real purpose behind what we do and why we do it. The buzzwords are buzzy because they're important. They help us, but they're not the point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'm sure we've both met teachers where the reverse is true, right? Where like they are thinking about those things and maybe not hoping that students develop a sense of capacity in the everyday experience of their room. They're, you know, it's the Thursday pop quiz or whichever.
Well, it's easy to understand too why people end up in that position because understandably, the structures, the systems that we work in, they influence us.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been there too, lots of times where I'm putting all of my eggs in one basket and realizing that that's kind of, I'm kind of backwards in my thinking. So I totally get it.
Mm-hmm. So the next question is something I think you've answered very succinctly already is, simply, is the culture of the band room positive or negative, something that you think about on a regular basis?
Yeah, every single day. Learning, whether you're in a school or just in life, happens best when you feel capable.
Mm-hmm.
And capacity in oneself is tied to a lot of different things. Culture, environment, ecosystem being one of them. I think one of my chief responsibilities is to design an experience and a space that facilitates their own ability to feel safe and capable. So yeah, all the time I'm thinking about it. What makes for a positive one? What makes for a negative one? How I influence it, mm-hmm. how they influence me, remembering that I'm not the sage on the stage, but a participant in this process.
Mm-hmm. So what would some student indicators be that the culture is positive?
From my experience, when things are healthy, you experience that students are genuinely taking ownership in that they care about it, like they care about their PS4, so they don't throw it out the window, right? Like that's how we make it relevant, right? Mm-hmm. You take care of things that matter to you. So you see them step into ownership. You see them be curious. They take leadership, not in a formal sense, but in the idea that leadership is a choice, not a title.
Mm-hmm.
You see risk taking because they know that they can, and challenge seeking because they're not afraid to fail. Peer supporting and vulnerability. And, you know, in thinking about those things, none of them are actually music specific.
Right.
So then what I actually think is that those things come together and they result in authentic musicking. And you hear that in their playing.
Wonderful. It's interesting that you comment on things that are non-musical because so many of those aspects are so important to foster in a band room, like leadership, like capacity, and like things that need to be there every day, right? Like I think about mentorship in our band. And when we split the 11 and 12 band one year, there was a lack of mentorship that was going on. Mm-hmm. And we just always took it for granted. But I guess like most things in education, you take it for granted until it's not there, right? Yeah. Don't know what you got till it's gone.
Yeah. And having the opportunity for interaction that's built in, I mean, there's just nothing that replaces that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what might some indicators be that the culture is negative?
Well, in some ways it's just the inverse, but I mean, a lot of the things, and I've experienced this specifically, where you step in and you kind of go, oh, why is it this way? What are they feeling? What are they thinking? So from my experience, the disengagement in terms of don't really want to be here, kind of have to be here, not really proud of being here. I've done a lot of thinking recently about the pedagogy of hope and the work of Paulo Freire and hopelessness and how the lack of something for which to be hopeful changes your interest in trying.
Hmm.
Why bother trying if there's no point? So when it's negative culture, I feel the hopelessness of almost like this isn't even relevant. You hear a lot of the language, the I can'ts, the I won'ts, very fixed mindset. Walls are up, people are isolated. It just sort of, there's an unsafe feeling, and it's not even just for the students, it's for me too. I felt in a negative environment because we've all been there. I feel like I can't be open myself. It's hard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like you're not all on the same team.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
And just like the positive environment influences the music making, that does too. It's almost a flat sort of music. Like it's going to feel less human. At least in my experience, it has. And it's been the quality is different too. And there's just, the music making feels very ineffectual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So some of the things that you've talked about are about how students work together, work with you, work with one another, like through their actions, I suppose, is a better way to say that. Can you describe a time where the culture was represented in your actions specifically?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't really know how to phrase this one. So I'll just kind of throw it out there and we can massage it together. I feel like it's always represented by my actions. And that's in some ways kind of, I don't know, unfair, scary. Feels like a lot to hold, but the climate is up to me. So I try, though I am human and getting better at remembering that, I try to model it in the way that I think and express my thought and the way that I speak in my physical presence. I strive for servant leadership so that it supports my learners. You know, and when I am my healthiest self, that feels really natural. And when I'm struggling, I sure do feel the way it affects the culture there too. So yeah, my actions definitely by intention, like when I'm intentionally trying to model the culture and when I'm struggling, have a massive effect.
Can you describe servant leadership?
Yeah, I love servant leadership. So there's a very big difference between being the boss or the authority who people follow because they have to, and being a leader who people follow because they want to. We're very lucky here to have a course called Music Leadership, and we explore that a lot. So servant leadership being the idea that I am here to help. I'm not here to hold you accountable or to tell you what to do or to micromanage every decision you make, but to facilitate you. And honestly, like help in any way you need so that you can feel and be successful. So that's kind of my approach. There's a really great book called Servant Leadership by Robert Greenleaf, who's the guy who really explored that thoroughly. And it's great for me. And I really try to help my students see themselves in the same light. Be a support to others in everything you can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you describe a time where the students' actions or behaviors reflected that the culture was healthy? So the last question, we talked about you, and this time it's about the students.
Yeah, I think, well, there's lots of different examples, like little and easy to miss things too, right? We get so we get so weighed down by the speed of everything. Even just being a music educator is like, I remember reading something once by a time, like trying to pilot a bus backwards down a hill blindfolders, right? Like it just feels like chaos constantly. Mm-hmm. So it's easy to miss the moments, but even something as small as the fact that my jazz students will organize and run their own sectionals once a week. Mm-hmm. And they know that the reason they do it is not because I ask them to, but because it helps them grow. And they record their sectionals and they send them to me. Mm-hmm. And there's an understanding that that's part of their assessment, but they know like the point isn't to be assessed on it. The point is to explore together. I think it's a huge example of healthy culture. And they have conflicts. They don't get along all the time in those sectionals. And they come to me and they say, so-and-so and I, how can we do this better? Because we want the section to be healthy. That's huge.
Wow.
That's huge. I see that as one of many, many ways. You know, like the little message on the board too. It just sort of says like, we are glad to be here. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's a reminder. There's lots of reminders of when I'm not doing it. I have to try and remember to also notice those ones and go, okay, yeah, there's authenticity here.
And the message on the board says, Mr. Kroll, we miss you, !! And then Friday's date. Because you said you weren't there. That's right. So I mean, without going into too much detail, what about a time where the students' actions and behaviors reflected an unhealthy culture?
Yeah, that actually is a really great question for this moment, because I'm just coming out of an experience with some students where that was exactly the case. Mm. And there's just as many examples of that in my history as there are the good culture, because that's how we learn. Mm-hmm. But I had this group of musicians who was really struggling to feel like what they were doing was relevant. Mm. And it came out in all kinds of ways. Emotional responses, reactions really to things, and not really diving into the music, a lot of babysitting and handholding on my part. And I responded frustratedly at times. And so we had this situation where a big chunk of the band, and they weren't a big group to begin with, kind of checked out. Mm-hmm. And it was at a really inconvenient time for us in our preparations for things. And it created a lot of animosity in between the students, for those that were still there and those that weren't. And between those students and me. And it was a time when I had realized that however it was it happened, and I didn't really see it happening, the culture had become negative. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to be judgmental and to not be curious about why those things happen and simply write people off. and very hard to look in the mirror in a way that's loving and not self-critical and sort of go, okay, what role did I have to play in this? And what role was theirs to own? And as I started thinking about that too, it ended up becoming a really kind of a cool example of a positive culture thing too. Because there was one day where we just sort of, I had mentioned it and I said, I know this has been tough for us. I'd really like to grow through it. And one of the students said, you know, I have to back up. So I had been to this conference on neurobiological effects of trauma and development. And I had shared with them how cool I thought it was and how when you can just be open and honest with things, growth is possible even when it's scary. And one of the young adults went, maybe we should be open and honest about what's going on in this band.
Wow.
And after I picked my jaw up off the floor, I said, okay, take a deep breath, Kroll, here we go. And we had a 45-minute conversation about the assumptions we'd been making about other people and the feelings that we had been having and the ways that I, as the teacher, had, you know, obviously unintentionally, but quite honestly, created opportunity for that animosity to grow. And, you know, it's certainly not like, poof, magic band teacher dust, everything fixed, or magic band student dust. But it was a kind of vulnerability that we had not yet explored. And for the first time in a long time, that group felt cohesive.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned a lot from that.
That's really powerful. And I love how you picked two recent examples, because I think it shows that you can simultaneously have both cultures at the same time. And it's sometimes a slippery slope between the both of them, from going from one to another and back again.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, you know, the river's flowing and sometimes you're paddling upstream.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I try to remember that it's not like a path and like a road and choose the fork. And, you know, the late Stuart McLean had this really cool story where, I don't know if anybody, I just love the Vinyl Cafe. And
mm-hmm.
one of the stories where one of the characters, Stephanie, was struggling with a decision to make. And the metaphor that came from it was that life isn't like a path, it's a carnival. And there's booths, and it always resonated with me. Like, I don't have to worry so much about always being on the right path, that there's kind of a come and go element. And what you say there about it kind of exists simultaneously really resonates for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're going to switch gears a little bit here. What are some less regular or long-term activities to maintain a positive program culture? Things maybe like trips, camps, things like that.
Yeah. We don't do anything especially different. Lots of school communities do the kinds of things that we do. I try to be really deliberate about how we approach them. So our concerts, our community concerts, I mean, we're a small community, and we really try to invite our broader school community in for that, you know, drawing about 300-400 people from the community. It's a chance for them to see young people in a really positive light. So our approach to those concerts is a really big part of our community culture. They happen twice a year in the big sense and smaller ways other times. Brandon Jazz is really big for us because it's our chance to get out and connect beyond this town and to know that we can be simultaneously humble in our intentions but proud of our place is kind of a cool thing. And so when we go out to perform, whether it be Brandon or wherever, we always talk about, like, what does it mean to come from Gimli? What does it mean to be from Evergreen? What do we want people to know? What do we want our story to be? So just try to make that deliberate about the culture. And we do this thing once a year for the grade 12s. And I'm very fortunate. I was very fortunate to have worked with a lot of amazing educators, one of whom was Jackie Dawson. And she had her grade 12s write a reflection at the end of every year. And that's something that I adopted.
Mm-hmm.
So every year our grade 12s write about their experience in music education from grade 6 or 7, depending on where they went to school, to present day. And it's powerful for them and for me, but I actually share them throughout the year with our current students. And we talk about the experience of that person and the lessons that they learned and the challenges and the successes. And that has been huge in building our band family, because we try to, that's kind of a tagline for us, band family, music family. From the very beginnings of kindergarten at Winnipeg Beach or SSES, all the way through grade 12 at Gimli High School. And I would never trade that.
Mm.
On a more regular sense, I started just this year, I kind of had a thought, well, maybe we'll give every day a buzzword, kind of make it a theme to the day. And so the three actually that ended up being really interesting and influential were Mindful Monday, mm-hmm. where we talked about emotional well-being and just knowing yourself, and we would meditate. And I never thought they would like it, but they love it. They love meditating. So Mindful Monday, Wise Wednesday, where I share those grade 12 reflections. We learn from our ancestors, so to speak, in a very not deep way, very recent ancestors. And Freedom Friday, where they run the class. And there's an ownership. I want them to feel like, hey, we can design good learning on our own too. So
great. Yeah, really good. We've explored the next question quite a lot already, but this one I think kind of drives it home. What role do you as teacher and conductor have in setting the culture of the room?
I think that the way you conceive of your relationship with your learners really can shape a lot of the culture. I mean, huge. Your role is huge, but it doesn't have to be overwhelming.
Can you explore that a little bit more?
Yeah. It's my job to create the structure of the experience, to build the ecosystem in a way that's healthy, not hurtful, honest. But then once the structures are in place, I see my role as more of a facilitator so that they can take stewardship of it. I don't know. I mean, if you look at it from one perspective, it can feel kind of daunting. Mm-hmm. And if you, like I, in the past, have had a tendency to be mildly self-deprecating, cough, cough, music student problem, and fixating on what's not yet good enough instead of recognizing how there is moments of celebration. There are moments of celebration, everything. But I don't want it to be overwhelming. It doesn't have to be. It's actually a tremendous opportunity to know that I have the opportunity, the skill set to create something that they can take and run with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And to dovetail what you've just said, does music itself play a role in manifesting the positive culture of the band room?
Yeah, this seems silly to say, but I have no idea how to answer that question. Because I want to say, yeah, because I know that, yeah. But how do you articulate that?
Mm-hmm. Like, how do we get it to happen in biology or chemistry or English, or does band or music or choir or drama or the arts have a, you know, silver bullet that gives it a new and different experience? And I don't know the answer to that either. I've had some electrifying English classes in my life.
Yeah. So, okay. So I've been doing a lot. This is going to sound like I'm not answering your question, but I'm going to try.
Excellent.
I've been doing a lot of thinking lately about the connections between holistic health and holistic learning. And how if you only treat one part of your health, that you don't actually get a whole picture. If you only deal with the food you eat, but don't deal with the way you feel, or there's a million examples of that. And I think education is the same way, in that everything has value and purpose. Mm-hmm. And everything can be connected and interrelatable if you are open to it. So, yeah, I mean, like, is there something unique about music? I think that music is just an incredibly human expression of life. And I mean, there's lots of people with far more experience than I who've said a lot more articulately and expressively, like they've spoken about that. I just know that I feel it. Mm-hmm. And I want my students to feel it. And that if you have a visceral experience with music, and there's lots of music that doesn't give you that, but you're striving for it, right? Looking for quality music or quality experience that then you can connect to culture and learning and living and health. That then we see that music is a part of a whole education and cultural experience, along with English language arts and mathematics and social sciences and physical education and literacy and trade. Like, it's all toward the same goal of a whole person. And one thing, not to say that I feel that music is more important than anything else, but one thing I think music does beautifully is connect with whatever's in the very middle of you. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't need words to describe it. You just feel it. And just talk to a teenager about how important music is in their life and how it gets, what it gets them through. And you know that you've got something tangible there that you can work with.
Just talk to a teenager about how important music is in their life, and you've got something tangible there you can work with. That's a powerful statement. As music educators, we are dealing with an element that connects adolescents with their identity and place in the world. Not necessarily band, but music in general. Rob describes music as an incredibly human expression of life. And that lines up with the feelings he wants his students to feel in an ideal culture. Quote, hope, capacity, self-love, challenge. That's a tall order, but he strives to model it for his students in the room. In the second half, we discuss what's in his band room beyond chairs, stands, and instruments, especially the students' contributions to it. Like the previous two episodes, personal wellness and our managing of it as educators is a substantial part of our conversation, as well as the importance of listening to one another and what we want our kids to take away from our program after they graduate. Here's part two. Okay, let's change gears again. So what about the physical space of the room? What role does the room's physical setting play in enhancing the room's culture? So I'm thinking about things like setup, layout, furniture, is there signage, all that stuff.
Well, yes. We are reminded by the things that we see often. I tried to find out, maybe you know, where the quote actually originated. I've seen it attributed to Aristotle, and I've seen it a lot of people about, we are what we repeatedly do. Mm. Therefore, excellence is not an act, but a habit. And so what you visually and visibly see in your space every day can't help but influence you. Mm-hmm. So does it look like a place where professionals gather? And I don't mean that in a sense that we use that term like professionals and non-professionals workplaces. I mean, like, are you a professional person? Do you care about what you're doing? Do you do it well? And you can do that in any career. Do you see examples of how you're part of something bigger? Mm. That's why I like the pictures on the wall. And a lot of places do that. Look back, see the people who've come before you and know that one day you'll be on that wall. And, you know, the posters and the carefully selected things, they do make a difference. They frame your mindset. Every school, every community has its own things. On my window up there, it says mindset. You have the power to set your mind. And most kids don't even see it now when they come in. But I point it out, right? It's like, hey, remember what's there. Set your mind, right? Mm-hmm. When they see themselves reflected in the space, these little sticky notes, I didn't put them up. Mm. Kids did that all over the school one day. And a lot of them just ended up here. Kids were bringing them in. And I swiped a few too. And I've just left them up. They see that. They know that students made that.
Mm-hmm. What are some of your favorite sticky notes that you see up there?
Don't wait for the opportunity. Create it. Mm-hmm. Be the change you wish to see. That's a hard one when you're a teenager.
Yeah.
Gosh, I just love them. Make good choices. That's a direct mocking of me. Don't wish for it. Work for it. You know.
Oh, that's a good one.
You are capable. I love that one. That one came up a bunch of times. It's like when they see themselves, then they recognize that they do matter. And when you know that you matter, there is hope. Mm-hmm. When you know that you are seen, when you are valued, greatest human need to be understood. That's shared all over the place. And I believe that when we see our values reflected around us, we act more intentionally. Mm-hmm. The physical space itself can be a challenge. We struggle here a little bit sometimes with not quite having the elbow room. But it's all in how you spin it. We're closer together.
Yeah.
You know, conserve body heat, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I remember when we were at the Optimist Festival in 1999 or whatever, the adjudicator said, you guys are really good at playing quiet because this room is so live that everything, our forte was a healthy mezzo piano, just because, the room is so bright and it's so live and that's just how you get used to playing. Mm-hmm. But I guess it's all in how you spin it, right?
Yeah. I mean, and this is true of anything in life. The lens that we look at something, you will always find what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. And so there, sort of circles back to one of your questions. Like, one of my responsibilities is to know how to shine the light, plant the flowers, Bill Christensen, flowers, plant, grow where you plant them, where we want to focus our energies. So being great at piano playing is a great, that's fantastic. And, we're so lucky in this community over the years of stewardship and investment. We have amazing gear. Mm-hmm. And I don't let a beat pass where I don't remind the kids that they have a lot to be grateful for and that we have a beautiful set of equipment for them. And that's not something to take for granted. Mm-hmm. And knowing that you have good things with which to work also encourages step up.
Yeah. Okay, so this is a big one, and it's something I know you've spent a lot of time with and thought a lot about. And here goes. Does your personal wellness have a role in maintaining a positive band room culture?
Yep.
Here's the sub-question. Can you describe a time where your personal struggle has affected the tone you were trying to set in the room?
Yeah. Ooh, talk about lifelong learning. So my sister is an art therapist, and I've learned a lot from her. And she has inspired in me a love of and a curiosity of the human experience. And recognizing that in order to be there for others, we must be there for ourselves. And I've been the fortunate and grateful recipient of a lot of supports from people around me who have taught me things like, don't give away all your soup. Mm. You need to eat soup too. And I loved giving away soup.
You know,
we do that, I think, as educators who are passionate about our area. And I think that describes a lot of music educators and educators in other areas too. We want to give. The flip side of servant leadership, maybe. You got to be careful. So has it? Yep. It has certainly affected the tone. What's an example of that? Well, you know, when you are physically and emotionally exhausted and you continue to push, sometimes you get so used to pushing and being so tired that you don't actually recognize where, how many decisions do we make in a day? 1,000? 2,000? You want to have a solid foundation and feel as well as you can. And I know that there have been times when I have just been struggling and I'm making calls on the, in the moment as I need to make that I would maybe do differently. And, you know, if I reflect back to that question, that the conversation we had about the time when there was some negative culture, you know, there's an example of being well. Like I've really had all is well and fine, but like physically, this has been a tough year for me. And when things are tough for you physically, they're tough emotionally. And when you really care about your students and you really care about the work you do, emotional tough times can't help but influence and affect what you're doing. So, you know, I try now to be a healthy model for my students about wellness and illness. And to say, hey, if we want to be people that are focused on being healthy, there's things that we can do that is preventative, right? Like let's be interested in healthcare, not illness management. Mm-hmm. Let's be interested in learning skills, not retroactive fixes when you don't get the test score you like, for mm-hmm. example, right? And I have learned to be really healthy. I'm trying to learn to be healthy. I've learned to be really honest with my students in a way that's appropriate, but to say, hey, I'm really struggling today. Mm-hmm. Any of you ever had a day when you've been really struggling to get, yeah, oh, well, of course, yeah, because you're 16. and we all feel that. And I think one of the harder things for me to learn through this is to learn how to be nicer to myself and recognize that when that's happening, it's not because I'm a poor educator or a lousy person. It's because I'm a human being. And I can, there's great power and potential in sharing that lesson with my students and saying, hey, there are going to be times in your life too where this is how it feels. And how you choose to respond to that will really affect your well-being. And first I was kind of nervous about it in sort of, you know, Wizard of Oz kind of way. But not surprisingly, my students have been nothing short of understanding and supportive and more giving of their own vulnerabilities and more interested in their own health and more honest. And so in the struggle, in the challenge, there's been a beautiful learning there, I think, for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what values do you want to impart to your students when they graduate that are specifically related to the room's culture?
It's like, it's easy to answer, to just put an answer out there. But it's also difficult. Mm-hmm. You know, when it comes to music culture in a music learning space, the purpose, in my opinion, of a music education is not necessarily to create professional musicians. And I know that there's lots of conversation and scholarship and interaction on that topic too. I just really love the idea of music being a way for us to be fully human. So what values do I want to impart? I hope that my students over their time here remember how they felt here so that when they go out into their other lives, that they seek it and they build it into their experience. They know what it feels like to matter, to be respected, to participate, to strive, to fall, to get back up again. That, to me, whether they pursue a career in music or hobby in music or simply value music in their other lives and work, that is incredibly powerful stuff. Mm-hmm. I hope that they learn and can take with them the value of process and product, that we strive for, you know, this hopeful product, but that it's actually the process that we should be emphasizing. You know, life is a journey. Cliches are true. Mm-hmm. Sorry. It's not about the end point of life is, you know, we're not working for that. We want the journey. We want to be able to get to the end of our journey and look back on the process and be grateful and reflective and full of hope and joy. And if we teach that in music and they can carry that with them into the outside world, then I think we've done a small debt of service for them. Debt of service isn't the right term. If they can take that forward, I think that we've given them a gift. And through music, if you try, you can learn to know yourself deeply. And when you know yourself deeply, in my experience, well, there's just so much that's possible.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You're totally right. And this is such a critical time where they need that. High school is such a vulnerable time for teenagers. Like, the difference we make is great in any direction. Mm. You know, we can give them a beautiful experience that hopefully they will, you know, cherish. Maybe not, you know, like look back on every single day, but, you know, that they'll look back fondly. One of my students who graduated last year said, "I'm really going to miss rehearsal." Like, not the concert, not the trips, just daily rehearsal. And reciprocally, we also have these stories of, you know, that one time in grade 10 when the geography teacher ... and it's been 15 years and we still remember. Mm-hmm. And we also don't want to impart those, though invariably, like you're saying, like, we are going to have bad days. Things are going to happen. Mm-hmm. But we want the bad days to be in the minority. It's not that we want to have more good days than bad days. It's that we want the vast, vast, vast majority to be good days. Dare I say, great days.
Yeah. And even turning those less than ideal days into powerful opportunities.
Yeah.
Like, there is something to be gained from every interaction.
That's right. That's absolutely right. So this has become one of my favorite questions in the interview process with all these people. Are there any books that you believe are essential reading for establishing and maintaining a positive classroom culture?
Yeah, totally. And the list is forever long, right? Mm-hmm. You know, thinking about the books that I sort of like jotted down a few, and thinking about our last interaction or dialogue there. And, you know, when I think back to my time in school, about the way it made me feel and the things it taught me, I value detail because of my music education when I was in high school. That was one thing that was big for us, and appreciating nuance and looking for connections. I think in education in general, what we hope for are learners that leave our school doors and move into our communities who are really solid connection makers and problem solvers. And you can take something way over here and way on the opposite side and find a way to bring them together. So a lot of my books are really not about music education at all, but about connection seeking and well-being. So in no particular order, Opening Minds by Peter Johnson is about the power of language. And I was really fortunate to actually, that was a suggestion to me from my superintendent here, Rosa Gray. It was a really amazing book using non-valuative language and inviting conversation from students. Like, tell me more about that, instead of, well, that was a really cool answer, right? Just tell me more. Opening Minds. Also super effective for rehearsal strategies, like thinking about how do you engage students in self-reflection about their music and about their experience. And it's just an awesome book. Opening Minds, Peter Johnson, John Stun, STON. Totally out of left field, In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts is a book about addiction by Gabor Maté. Dr. Gabor Maté is an MD, worked in the downtown east side of Vancouver, travels a lot, does some really amazing work on trauma and how it influences our brain development and how we can, as community, seek well-being and health. And so In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts made a lot of sense to me about the way that we compensate for emotional distress with actions or substances that give us momentary pleasure, even though there are consequences. Mm-hmm. And our kids, as well as ourselves, experience this all the time. Addiction is not a bad, evil, out there thing. It's a human response to a wild world. And that book really helped me understand my students and their cell phones and their habits and their experiences and their mechanisms for coping with struggle. And when you can understand that, in my opinion, then you can help design to be more loving and inclusive and helpful. So in the realm of Hungry Ghosts, the music lesson, Victor Wooten, lots of folks I'm sure are familiar with that one. I love the way, I think you know that book fairly well.
I do. I teach it in our school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love the way that it frames music in such a real, like, no apologies made about what skills you do or don't. Like, the music lesson is great for all of us music educators and for our students. The Courage to Teach, Parker J. Palmer. It's an old book that's been republished several times. Like, it's the kind of book you have to read a paragraph and then put down for 2 or 3 days. And just like, ooh, how do I feel about that? I feel really icky about that. Okay, I'm going to think about, feel my way through that one, right? Mm-hmm. But I can't recommend that enough, The Courage to Teach. Servant Leadership, Robert Greenleaf. Great starting point if you're interested in that kind of approach to leadership. The Gifts of Imperfection and Daring Greatly by Brené Brown. Some really neat work that she's done on shame and vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And just showing up without worrying about having all the answers first. So applicable to music learning. Mm-hmm. And then for me, Jen Sincero has a book called You Are a Badass. Now, that doesn't really work its way into my teaching so much, but for me, even though the title is a little bit like cheeky, the content is just made so much sense in terms of valuing who you are and what you have to bring and being honest and open and setting boundaries. Sometimes, I don't know if any of the music educators that are out there feel similarly, but I have a hard time setting boundaries. Like, gee, it's 8 p.m. Should I go home? I should have gone home a while ago because there's always tomorrow. And that book really helped put some things in perspective for me. And there's piles more, and I'm really keen to hear what your other folks have also said. So yeah. I'll be keeping my ears peeled.
Brené Brown has come up a few times, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is great. Okay, last thing. Is there anything that you'd like to discuss that you believe is critical to discussing band room culture?
I don't know.
We've covered a lot of ground today.
I could talk about this for hours. I'm curious, what is something that you've come across in your learning that has really stuck for you? It might spark a thought.
Something that I think a lot about with kids is listening to them authentically, like really listening to them and not just generalizing that, you know, they're going through a teenage thing or, you know, they'll get through it or whatever, but like just actually listening. It makes you think back to our discussion about values. What values do you want to leave with kids and listening, like listening authentically and not hearing someone while you formulate your response, like not arguing, not fighting, but just listening. And when a student may say something to me, I can just sit down and think, that's really interesting. I'm going to think about that, which also leads me to not deciding a lot of things right away. Hmm. I'll think about it. Can I do X, Y, Z? What do you think about this for a project? Let me think about that.
Sit with it.
Yeah. And just take my time and so that they feel heard. I'm not just going to say no. Like, cause there are some things that a student may suggest that I instinctively think, I'm not sure I love that idea, but if I sit with it, maybe I will see a value in it that is obvious to them and is not immediately obvious to me. I just think it's really important. I think kids need to feel heard. Like everybody in the world needs mm-hmm. to be heard. But I think a lot about how disempowered it must be to be a teenager in this time of their lives and the power that we have in this time in our lives to do that. Mm-hmm. It is very easy to disempower them.
Totally.
And I think we see adults do it all the time and just in daily interactions. Like if they're going to Subway and the manager's having a bad day or whatever, that we are just careful. Mm-hmm. So one thing that I think a lot about that relates to listening is just like being kind and not like being nice, like being kind and viewing everything from a lens of kindness. I just think that's really important. And that we don't view kindness as an action. It's like a way of looking at the world. It's mm-hmm. a way of being in the world. And I think kids need to see that because
it's not reflected very many places.
That's right. Mm-hmm. You know, in a world where everyone's out for themselves and race to the top, that, you know, maybe it's not a race. Secondly, maybe there's another way to the top.
Yeah. What even is the top?
Yeah, exactly. What does that even mean?
You know, that's really interesting that resonates and that clicks for you. I feel so strongly about that idea of validating the person. And what I mean by that is that you are valid. You matter. And when you talk so genuinely about listening, even if at first blush the idea, like the example you give, doesn't really make sense, like the moments of saying, you know, let me really think about that. Even if you still feel the same way later, lets them know that you really genuinely appreciated and cared for and respected the thought. And then sometimes you just give yourself the moment to think about it and come back and go like, you know, so tell me again, like why do you feel that about mm-hmm. me? And just space is a beautiful thing for thinking. And
well, and like you had said, like, tell me more about that. Mm-hmm. And there was a time last year where a student was doing a project and it was different than what I'd laid out, but cool kid, go with it. And when they presented it, I said, oh, I really liked how you did this one thing. And they said, that was the whole point of the project. But like, that wasn't immediately obvious to me right. until they did it.
Yeah.
And then now that I look back, of course it was the point.
Yeah.
I just, you know, we're not mind readers, but I didn't have the perspective. And if I had shut the student down because I wanted them to do selection B mm-hmm. on the project,
you would have missed this amazing opportunity.
Exactly.
And it's such a beautiful example of collaborative, co-creating. And one of the very first things you said when you started sharing your thought on that was about the, like, sort of, it wasn't the word that you used, but the idea of the wisdom that they have. Mm-hmm. We have just as much to learn from our students as they from us. And that's happened to me too a couple of times where I was so glad that I didn't just like, nah, not so much, because this thing came out of it that I could have never come up with that. And it ended up being this rich learning for everybody, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, the old adage that we should never believe we're the best musician in the room.
Yeah. There's an approach to supporting young people with challenging behavior called restitution. A lot mm-hmm. of school divisions have talked a bit about it, and I've been lucky to learn a bit. And I think one of my favorite parts about it is they call it the triangle, restitution triangle, and the three things you should do when dealing with conflict. And one of them is validate the need. Like, I understand what you were feeling like you needed. And the other one that really sticks with me, not to like shun the third side of the triangle, but it's stabilize the identity. Mm. Like you are somebody of purpose and value. And because so often Brene Brown connection, right? We work in a shame-based way. And the kind of culture that I think about when I listen to you talk is one where the identity is stabilized and the needs are validated. And, you know, is that unique to music? I don't know. I hope not. Mm-hmm. But I know for sure that because people, especially young people, have such a personal and intimate relationship with music, that it puts us in a beautiful position to support them with the tools and the opportunities to be whole, healthy people. And I don't know, I would hate to miss out on that.
Absolutely. That's really great, Rob. Thanks so much for speaking with me today.
I can't tell you how much fun this was. I just thank you very much for opening my mind to things that I'm typically too fast to think about, because you don't just sit down. I genuinely appreciated this. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. And that's been my conversation with Rob Kroll. Amazing things can happen when we really value the students and deeply believe that they have something to offer the program. Sure, the educators set the course, but the students contribute to building what they want as well. It's the educators' plan, but it's a team effort. Powerful things can happen if we take time to listen to our kids and, like Rob says during his reading list, view their behavior as, quote, compensating for emotional distress with action. What do they need from us? And what is a music program's capacity to give? And I mean that in a realistic way. We can't solve everything all the time, but perhaps we can solve some of the things some of the time. If all of our programs in our schools can work toward that end, what an environment we could provide for our students. If you'd like to read the cumulative research, the paper is being published in two parts in Canadian Winds, starting with fall 2018. If you don't get the journal, get in touch with me and we'll put something together. Thank you so much for listening.
For more information, you can head to bandtogetherpodcast.com or my personal website at kenleychristofferson.com. Spelling's in the show notes. It's all good. Follow me on Twitter at kenley_k or on Facebook at facebook.com/kenley. Thanks again to Rob Kroll, and a preemptive thanks to Marissa Hirsch, who is featured in our next episode, available on the website, Apple Podcasts, or Google Play. I'm Kenley Christofferson. Until next time.